We've discussed multiple times on our podcast the fact that we are facing a triple global threat. The threat consists of conflict, climate, and pandemics. Was there ever a time when that was more true? I can't think of any. Building resilient, sustainable communities is key to survival on our planet and is the essential response to this triple threat. One of the cornerstones in our communities is our businesses and the leaders building them. Today, we take a deep dive into the action of one leader and the building of resiliency within a Tucson icon, Bookman's Entertainment Exchange. And I really could go on and on about that. It's been here since I have. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Down to Earth Tucson. How to Build a Resilient Business. A look at Bookman's Entertainment Exchange is the title for our show. And I want to tell you about our guest. He's a pretty fantastic human being and becoming a friend. Sean has been the president of Bookman's Entertainment Exchange since 2013, which I can't even believe that, Sean. He returned to Tucson in 1993, having graduated from the U of A, yes, in 1998 with a master's degree in film theory and criticism from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, another stellar university, but it doesn't make you a wildcat. His journey with Bookman's began soon after when he joined the staff of the flagship Grant and Campbell location as a book buyer in September of that year. Sean has spent his entire professional career with Bookman's, and I didn't know that. It's like he's my friend, and getting ready for the show, I went, oh, I didn't know that. Having held the position of store manager, regional manager, director of operations, vice president of operations, and executive vice president. And after I read that, I thought, not much gets by this big dog because he's been in all of those positions, so he knows what he's doing, and we've had a lot of really pretty fun and engaging conversations about what that leadership looks like at Bookman's. So the overall theme for the show today is twofold. One is COVID and what happened and what continues to happen, because folks, it ain't over. It ain't over till it's over. I read an article in the New York Times today that talked about the spike in cases in Europe and maybe China, not sure. They don't tell us. Europe and I think it said Asia, but it's not over. And I want to think it is, and I think I'm being so bold when I don't wear my mask, and maybe I'm just being stupid. So I really want everybody to be aware. This is not an old subject, and Sean and I have spent a lot of time of what it's like to be at ground zero with keeping a business that involves total walk-in customers pretty much, and how to curate that and manage it and how scary it was. So we're here to start that conversation. And I'm excited about it because not everybody gets a look inside what a business had to go through. Agreed?
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah. So from your perspective, what were the biggest challenges? And if the question fits, what are some of the continuing challenges? So let's start with what were the biggest challenges?
Well, I think from a leadership perspective, the biggest challenge both at the beginning of COVID, throughout the last 2 years, and now, and you put the point on it, Gina, when you said that it's not over, the biggest challenge has been inconsistent or inaccurate data, would be how I would put it. So as a business leader, or really any leader, you're trying to make decisions based on the best information you can get your hands on. And the information, because this is an unprecedented event, I mean, not only in the sense that COVID's a unique illness, its impact on societies is unique and so forth, but I think there are many aspects of its inception that were kind of unprecedented. And as a business leader, I think my biggest challenge was trying to make the right decision, knowing that I'm making that decision based on information which could prove to be false tomorrow. And so I'm going to just kind of start by going through a little bit of the inception point
for
Bookman's.
Totally.
And I was thinking about it before we came in today. So, and it's interesting because we just had the Tucson Festival of Books for the first time in 2 years. And for me and for Bookman's, there were a number of events that happened at the beginning of March 2000 that kind of I look back now and go, boy, what was I thinking at that point in time? So I'll share one personal anecdote and then we'll get into the professional side. So my daughter's 21st birthday was March 10th, 2020.
I already have goosebumps.
And for her birthday, she wanted to travel to Europe to enjoy her 21st birthday in Europe. Now, if we look back, we realize that that is exactly the time in which the European community was beginning to really suffer the first significant wave of COVID. So her mother and I are talking about whether this trip is even advisable and what would be appropriate precautions.
Scares a parent to death no matter what age they are.
Exactly. What would be appropriate precautions? And of course, I'm trying to be the rationalist in the room and say, well, you know, the level of transmission is relatively small. And we'll call it that time, the obsession was surface cleanliness. And as long as we're sanitizing our hands and being cautious in that regard, then we thought we could kind of control the spread of this thing. So we say, okay, go ahead and go, but just follow these precautions, right? And so she's in Europe that week. She is in Amsterdam the evening that our former president announced the closure of immigration back into the United States, or basically the closure of the border effectively. The way that announcement was handled, and I don't want to, I could go down that rabbit hole and spend all day talking about it, but the way that announcement was handled, it was unclear exactly what the nature of that closure was going to be, or were they going to prevent all human beings from traveling from Europe? There was some indication that you would only be able to travel from England, but not from the continent. And so we get on the phone that night with my daughter, and we're in a panic. We're telling her she's in Amsterdam. Ugh. She has a flight booked 2 days later out of London. We're screaming at her to get on the first train out, you know, go down to the train station right now. I have this vision of World War II Europe and people trying to escape Nazi invasion, literally.
It was like that.
It was.
Really was.
And so, fortunately, I'll cut to the end of the page of that story. We were able to get her back over to England. She flies back to the United States and she lands in Los Angeles, which was her ultimate destination, approximately 5 hours before the mandatory quarantine period was set to begin. And so she doesn't have to quarantine, but when she lands, she tells me she's running a fever.
Oh, my Lord.
And again, at this point in time, we really have no context for what this disease looks like in terms of when people get it, what are the symptoms we really need to be concerned about, and so forth. And so we tell her, look, get home and quarantine. So she gets home, she quarantines. Now, my daughter's also a type 1 diabetic, so she's in an at-risk category. So we managed to finagle a COVID test for her. And fortunately, she was negative, but she was probably one of the first 100 or so individuals tested in Arizona. So that was kind of my starting point.
Wow.
Concurrent with that, at exactly that same time, TFOB is trying to determine whether they're going to have an event, right? And obviously, authors are beginning to cancel. People are beginning to get nervous about whether or not having a crowded public event is an appropriate thing to be doing in this environment. But there are also authors, especially many smaller authors, who are completely dependent on the event at TFOB to make a living.
And that's, in case people want to remember again, it's Tucson Festival of Books, TFOB.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at the implosion of this event, which many authors are dependent upon for their livelihoods, which is a core aspect of not only our presence as a book institution in this community, but something that we feel very strongly is an asset to the community. And so we get this bright idea, well, let's have a little mini Tucson Festival of Books at Bookman's. And so, because we know that there are a number of authors who've traveled here, they have inventory they're trying to sell, they really don't have another outlet. So the very weekend that event was canceled, we said, oh, we'll have a small event in our store.
You didn't tell me this
small
part.
Small event. And again, remember that our information about COVID is evolving radically and in real time.
By the second.
By the second. And so initially we thought, well, you know, as long as we keep the crowds down to a dull roar, right, this will be fine. And I can remember walking in it was the weekend, I believe it was the 14th of March, 2020, but it was that weekend I walked into our Midtown location and saw how crowded it was. And we had, of course, put up signs saying, you know, please keep your distance or stand 6 feet back. And I realized that was just a totally unpractical aspect. And so gave me a little moment of pause. We didn't cancel it out right at that moment. But again, I went home and started to digest what I had seen. At the same time, I started to do the math, as it were. And again, this all goes back to data, right? What data am I making a decision upon?
Because you're a data junkie.
Because I'm a data junkie. And most business...
Let's be known.
And most business leaders are, though.
Yes.
Whether it's
they
numbers
wanna know
or information.
The benchmarks, the metrics, the bottom line. Yep.
Correct. And so, I went back and just started to do simple math on the spread rate of COVID at that time, which, given what we now know, is still a tiny fraction of what ultimately became. But even looking at it from that perspective, I realized if we don't radically change what we're doing as a society, we are going to be in some serious trouble. We have to take action right now. And so I walked in that Monday morning and gathered my executive team and literally said, okay, if we shut the stores down today, how long can we stay in business?
I have chills. It's so real. It's so awful.
What a lot of people don't realize, and especially with a brand that is so well known like Bookman's and a business that has had such longevity in the community, is that for most businesses, we're effectively employment engines, which is to say that we live payroll to payroll to a certain extent.
Right.
We're trying to generate enough income to cover our expenses and payroll through a limited period of time and then have a little bit left over to grow and evolve the business.
Right.
So most businesses don't have huge amounts of cash on hand. And when the cash stops flowing in, your lifeblood starts flowing out darn quickly.
Yes, no matter how big or how small. And that's what shocks me, because I've had small businesses and very big businesses, and cash flow was king.
Cash flow is everything.
Ugh.
So this is the conversation on, what was it? I believe it was March 15th or 16th of 2020. If we close the doors right now, because we have to, I mean, that was the first thing we had to come to grips with. There's not really a choice from a public health perspective, from a community perspective, from a ethical obligation perspective. There really wasn't a choice at that moment. And of course, this was before the mandates had started to come forward, but they would follow a week or two later. Everybody kind of woke up to this reality. But we realized we had to act. And again, we realized that this is evolving so quickly, we can't wait for instruction. Right, we can't wait for a surety. We have to make a decision based on the information we have and just act. It requires action. So after asking the question, how long can we survive if we close the doors today? We realized we had approximately 6 to 8 weeks of cash. So we could survive approximately 2 months. And the condition of that survival was we have to maintain folks' health care. We're dealing with a public health crisis. We need to continue to pay for their health care so that if anybody gets sick, they have access to that health care. We also determined that we are able to maintain payroll for our salaried staff. And if we furloughed our hourly staff, they would be eligible for unemployment, but we could still bring them back on board when we reopened. Now, at this time, we thought we'd be closed for 3 weeks.
It's unreal. I mean, I want everybody to press pause here, because the reason I wanted you to relive this with us is because of the stark reality of what was happening inside Tucson businesses, yours being a major one. So go ahead. It makes my heart stop.
So when I contemplated closing the business for 3 weeks and we determined that we had about 8 weeks of available cash, I thought, oh, we're going to be fine. It's going to be tough.
Little did we know.
Difficult, but we're going to be fine. You know, we have to do the right thing here. And so we closed the doors, and I can remember it like it was yesterday. We post a sign saying, you know, we're closing for 3 weeks, with every expectation at that point that we will be reopening in 3, maybe 4, maybe 5. We'll have to wait and see what happens. And so that's how we engaged. We roll 4 weeks forward, and clearly we're not reopening, right? The things are getting worse, not better. And meanwhile, we're also contemplating, what does our world look like when we reopen, if we reopen? Bookman's is a social gathering business. Social gathering is the reason we exist. Bookman's is, I believe, at its core, a place for culturally engaged people to gather, to engage with each other, to engage with objects that have meaning for them, whether those are books or guitars or music or
tchotchkes.
Thank you.
I like the tchotchkes.
Video games,
right.
What have you. It's really about you're driven by culture at some level and you want to be in a three-dimensional space with other human beings that have that same drive, that same passion, that same commitment. So now I'm thinking, wow, the world has completely changed. Social gathering is suddenly a threat, right? It is suddenly something to be avoided. My business is completely dependent on our desire to gather with one another. So what does business even look like coming out of this? And so we just start to have to make choices. We make decisions. We make decisions about, well, first decision that we made is that one, we're not going to reopen just whether the whether state or federal government says it's okay or not okay. We're going to determine what our protocols are for operating the business as safely as we can. And once we've achieved those protocols, then we will reopen. So we reopened the stores on June 1st of 2020, about 2.5 weeks after we were, according to state mandate, able to reopen. The reason we waited is that we didn't have all of our protocols in place. Those protocols were the ability to clean, the protective screens that we put up at the stores, and some other elements that allowed us to quarantine inventory, because at this time in the pandemic, we thought that contact transmission was an incredibly important thing. We had to be very, very careful about the touching of things. And so we wanted to make sure we had the best execution of our protocols, and then we thought we could reopen. The one thing we decided on was that, based on the evidence we had at that time, masking was key. Masking was going to be key. So we were going to open with an absolute hard mask mandate, which is to say that we were going to, all of our staff obviously were going to be masked, but all of our customers were also going to be required to be masked. And we also launched some services like curbside pickup and online ordering through email, so that knowing that there were some people who would not be able to accommodate that condition.
Right, right, right.
They would not be able to wear a mask because of a health condition, because they're just uncomfortable, what have you. But we felt that for the protection of everybody, we had to be firm in that position. And of all the things that we decided on throughout this pandemic, that is, I think, the one that at the time was a really difficult decision. We knew there would be a significant number of customers who would be uncomfortable, but we felt that we had an obligation to protect
your staff and the community.
Exactly.
I mean, it cuts both ways.
Well, and I think, you know, from my perspective, the staff and the community are one thing. The Bookman's community is really one thing. It's staff, customers, the people that our customers engage with that aren't
right.
in the store,
it's a
the entirety of the community, and
right.
we had to be mindful of that if we were going to reopen a social gathering business during a pandemic, we had to be mindful of those ripple effects, and so that was the decision we made, and it was difficult. I will tell you that we got a lot of pushback in a variety of ways: angry customers, claims of discrimination that were filed with the state. There was a number of issues that we had to manage and deal with moving through. But again, we were acting on the best data we had, and we just had to be true to that. We have to say, okay, the best information we have is that this is going to matter, and so we will act accordingly.
Interesting that still bears out. And I want to ask you to press pause for a minute, because you know how I said to you this just in, and I point to my head
mm-hmm.
because these thoughts come in and I'm kind of cracking up, because where I should have started and I didn't, but that's what I love. It's my podcast. Is there are people, hopefully none of the people living in Tucson, that don't know what Bookman's Entertainment Exchange is. And I would like to answer that, and then you get to correct the host here, right?
Great.
But Bob Oldfather and Amy Sue, his wife, are dear, dear friends of mine. And from what I understand from Bob, his father sold him the first Bookman's for $1 in a location very close to where I live, and the rest is history. So Bookman's was really a place in the beginning when I moved here for buying and selling of used books. That's the long and short of it. It expanded. We talked about the tchotchkes. I mean, Bob's a brilliant man. Please don't tell him I said that on air. I'm asking you very, very specifically. Don't tell him. Kidding, of course. But he's got a vision. He's got a talent for knowing what's coming. And he, musical instruments, people are always going to use them. And then you added tchotchkes because I'm a very typical shopper. woman, admit it. So I go in and I'm there for a book. I'm there to sit in a cozy chair. I'm there to watch all the little kids running around, being joyful. I watch the staff because there's always interesting stories there. But you have multiple locations here in Tucson, Phoenix, and Flagstaff. So it's a culture of acceptance, for sure. It's a culture of fun. I would say that for sure. Quirkiness.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of normal-looking people like me that go in there. But it's a wonderful place to be. The energy is there. My kids loved it. When my granddaughter comes to visit, she will love it because it's just a place where people want to hang out, which makes it harder. You don't go in to buy one thing and come out. I've never done that. Never. I've never gone in there, gotten a book, and then left because you start looking around because there's all these other cool things and fun things and cards and stuff like that. So Bob grew it into something really remarkable. And of course, my interest, and I didn't know him before Mrs. Green's World started. I knew about Bookman's, and I was looking for partners that were compatible with my values. So the recycling of books is a huge part of it. I became friends with Sheila Kresser Crowley, got to know you and the team. And it is an icon, and I don't say that for, it's iconic here. Mm. And I want to also point out to everybody, in case it just slipped under the radar, paying for people's medical care. This is a socially responsible company. They don't just mouth it. I mean, Sean and I have spent literally hours talking about this and what it was like. So we have to tell everybody what Bookman's Entertainment Exchange is, and there will be a link on the show note page on the website, so we don't have to worry about that. So I want to talk just briefly about morale, because I can't imagine, because I didn't have it, our business blossomed during the pandemic because we started doing a lot more online training via Zoom. It's like my best friend. You only have to get half dressed every day, which is wonderful. And you can reach people. I thought I was going to hate Zoom, but I found in this experience, you can connect with people on Zoom. You can look in their eyes. You can get their feedback. So I've become very comfortable with it. But it's not the same as going to Bookman's.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you keep morale up?
It was not easy. I will tell you. It was very difficult. So a couple things that we did. One is that we do have a small portion of the business where we sell through the online marketplaces.
Right.
So we tried to funnel energy into that portion of the business, both with some staff, just to kind of keep people active and engaged.
Yes.
We also, once we realized that reopening was going to be a possibility, we knew that there were steps we had to take to clean the store, to get it ready for that reopen. But the biggest thing we did was just be honest with the staff about what we knew and what we didn't know. And that's probably the biggest challenge, is you want to lead, but you also want to remain positive, optimistic, you know, in that kind of moment. You don't want to show the uncertainty,
right?
Because you're worried that the uncertainty is going to lead to their uncertainty, but the reality is, uncertainty is a huge part of the world we are living in now, and will continue to live in. And so, in the end, it was about communicating transparently, and letting folks know what we were doing as a management team to sustain the business, continue to reassure them that the business would remain, and that if they remained loyal to us, we would be able to be loyal to them. Now, it helps that we were obviously paying for their health care and that they were still all on the books.
I think it helped a lot. But there's a moral decision in that.
But of course, ultimately, that is the point of that decision, is that this is a pandemic. This is a very specific societal moment, and we felt that we had to do, like everybody else hopefully in society, what we can to do right by other individuals in society in this moment. The biggest thing that we could do, we felt, was sustain the health insurance of our staff. And so that was a huge piece.
And be radically transparent.
Right.
I think that really matters, letting people know what's going on so there wasn't all that uncertainty.
So, for example, when the PPP program was announced, we, of course, let staff know that we were applying for it. We let them know when those resources were available. And I will be completely candid, without the PPP funding, Bookman's would not have survived.
That was perfect, because my next question about PPP money. It certainly helped us to get through some things, because several clients or restaurants and they weren't open. So I called them and said, stop paying us. And so it hurts. The smaller the business, the bigger the hurt.
Absolutely.
In some cases. So you did get PPP money and it helped you survive.
It did. But even that, again, the interesting thing about it was it allowed us to survive. But by the time the PPP funding came through, the federal government had also engaged in enhanced unemployment benefits and a few other things that were actually doing a very good job of sustaining our staff, which was wonderful. So we stepped up initially with the healthcare piece. The government stepped up with living expenses through enhanced unemployment. So the good news was our staff was actually in a fairly good place to weather the storm at that point. Our worry was, what's business going to look like when we reopen? Again, we want to retain all of our staff, not just 20 or 30 or 50 or 75% of them. But business isn't going to rebound instantly. It's
right.
Not like we open
right.
the doors and suddenly
it's
the same level. Nor should it be at
even
some level.
Still.
Right. Nor should it be
right.
at some level.
Like right.
We didn't necessarily want to have the kind of jam-packed crowds in a Bookman's that you might see on a typical Saturday. And so the PPP funding was critical. What was interesting, again, was that initially the guidance that the government gave out for how to spend the funding dictated that it be spent very quickly and on exclusively on payroll. And it wasn't that the payroll piece of it that was difficult. I mean, certainly we were going to spend more than what we got on payroll. It was the rapidity with which the government was saying we need to spend it. We were more concerned that we had the ability to weather the storm once the store was back open to make sure that we could pay everybody.
Right.
And also be able to pay everybody from the right from the moment we reopened. And as business built back up, we would be able to then return to profitability
right, generate
a year,
your own cash flow.
Year and a half later. And so, again, the decision there was, as a decision maker, as a leader, I had to say, all right, I have to do what's right for the business, which is the business is the people who work in it and the community it serves.
Right.
And so whether or not I'm taking a risk with a government program, I have to make that decision from that perspective. The good news is that pretty quickly the government realized, hey, the initial rules aren't really applicable to our moment right now in the pandemic. We're seeing that employers are taking, it's a longer cycle to get their businesses relaunched. So we need to change some of the payback rules, which they did. And ultimately,
they did.
Ultimately, it was very important that
also
they did so.
Fast.
And so I think the through line, again, is imperfect data. You got to make the best decision you can in the moment. And if you keep community forefront, right? Community is the forefront of your thought process. And then the ethics will drive you, I think, to if not success, at least sustainability, right?
Well, they'll drive someone like you. They didn't, and I'm not just blowing smoke. I mean, not every business leader made these same decisions. So I think that's important. And I'm kind of cracking up because I want to tell everybody, Inside Edition, when Sean and I go to meet with his partner in crime, Katie, we have like a 30-minute or 60-minute meeting scheduled, and 2 hours and 20 minutes later, I'm walking at the door saying, oh my gosh, it's 5 o'clock. So that's what's happening with this show, because ostensibly, we have 8 minutes left. Not happening, folks. So I hope you'll go, like, press pause, go get a drink of water, because this is really good stuff. This is what I've wanted to know about inside bigger businesses, inside business leaders' heads. And I know the other person that I'm very close to is Todd Hanley from Hotel Congress. You know, you talk about, oh my gosh, I mean, everything there. They have a hotel, they had 3 restaurants, which they still don't have. So I think people really want to know what you have to say. So everybody take a chill pill, go get your kombucha or your tea or, you know, a margarita, I don't care, because Sean has a lot more good stuff to say and I'm not going to worry about the clock. Okay, before we go on to the next subject, I want to talk about a whole different trajectory. From where you sit and watching the numbers every day, are we out of it fully? Are we going in a really strong, good direction? What are you seeing?
I think the first thing that we have to realize is we may never be out of it fully again.
Ever.
Ever.
Period. Hard stop.
And I
Hard
think
stop.
Part of what we're going to, and there's been quite a bit of discourse about this. I mean, it really is pivoting our mindset from pandemic to endemic. And what does that mean? What does that look like? And I think, you know, I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said publicly by many, many people much smarter than I on this subject, but vaccination is critically important. but we also have to live our lives. And so I think it's a question of protection for, we protect ourselves through vaccination. Bookman's did institute a vaccine mandate in the organization. We felt it was very important to ensure the protection of our staff and the customers that we do so. So we think that, I think vaccination's important. We also have to realize that at this point between vaccination and exposure, we have some built up immunity in the community. Now that doesn't mean that COVID's going to go away. COVID is likely not going to go away.
I know. It's going to be like the flu. Did you get your COVID shot this year?
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
But it does mean that we're going to have to figure out a way to live socially and engage with each other in an endemic environment where COVID is an endemic disease.
Right.
So to the sense that I think we're out of it, I think we are out of the phase where we have to react to COVID as a pandemic with the kind of dramatic prevention measures that we've seen in the past. There are going to be spikes. When they happen, we will have to react accordingly. We may have to all mask up again. We may have to go back to more restricted social interaction again. But those things will evolve and happen over time. I think probably the hardest thing at this point in the pandemic is the same thing as it's been all along. Our reality changes as information changes, as the pandemic changes. Early in the pandemic, there was an incredible emphasis on surface cleanliness. We were cleaning everything.
Right.
We were spraying everything down.
I was dying because of the waste it produced. Mrs. Green's like, oh my gosh, there's so much disinfectant, which is not ultimately good for you anyway. Paper towels and wipes. Oh my gosh.
And early on, that was the guidance we were getting, right?
You should have seen us washing our hands here.
But the truth is, by the time we got to July of 2020, we'd had enough data set to realize this was an airborne communicable disease.
Not
it wasn't
helping.
Surface communication, or it wasn't communicable by surface contact. And so you have to change. And I can remember when I let everybody know, look, we're not going to constantly spray our counters. The amount of chemical that we're putting into the air, the amount of paper waste that we're generating is exceeding any value that we're of protection for the people we're doing. We're creating a problem. And the other piece is really just theatrical. It's really just theatrical. It was not a practical prevention.
It made people feel better.
Exactly.
That's about it. It's like, oh, they're washing down their surface. I must be safe here.
Exactly. When I go to a grocery store and I'm putting down organic food on a conveyor belt that they've just sprayed down with chemicals. And I'm thinking, what are we doing?
This is counterintuitive because I just breathed it in too. I know.
What are we doing? And so I think now, I mean, we're going to be talking a lot, I think, societally over the next couple months about masking. Do we mask? Do we not mask? There's a real social cost to constantly wearing a mask and not being able to see each other's faces, to not be able to engage fully in that way. Now, is that cost justified for protection? I think for a lot of, I talked earlier about the fact that instituting a mask mandate at Bookman's is one of the things I'm most proud of. Are we still in that moment? I'm not so sure right now. And I think the point is uncertainty is okay. We're not going to be certain. We have to react to the data we have
probably
at that
forever.
Moment. Correct.
I think forever. And
I
one
agree.
Of the words that I think fits is nimble. We have to be nimble. I mean, it's just really the current reality. And when you're dealing with the public, there are so many moving parts. So let's get on to the second part of the conversation, which is exciting for me, because the backstory, and you that listen to me know I love to tell backstories. I went to meet with Sean pretty much with the mindset of Mrs. Green's World platform is changing. We're moving into a new direction, focused a lot more on environmental education. And I wanted to meet with Sean and say, it's been wonderful. Thank you for your support. But fortunately, I started out with a question of what do you think our relationship will look like in the future? And I told Sean some of the things that were going on. And he painted a vision for me that inspired me. It inspired the heck out of me. And he said something like, I want to create a sustainable and socially just work environment for the inside out. I want all of our aspects of our business to be looked at, our client interfaces, our waste, everything. And so we've been having wonderful conversations about that. And I think over time, that's what'll happen. You've got a lot of big things that are going on at Bookman's now and in the future. So we decided that I would consult with them because I'm a good big green dot connector, and to help kind of be like the consultant chief sustainability officer that's able to help with strategic relationships as we move forward. So I want you to paint your vision for what you'd like to create in terms of being the poster child for a sustainable and socially just work environment. And if it takes the rest of the podcast, I'm good with that because it's a great vision. Because the thing that you get is that it's systemic change. It's changing people's habits over time. There are lots of moving pieces. It's not a prescription where I come in and say, I'm Mrs. Green, and this is what we do for Green Team training. There are so many aspects to this, which you learned very early on, coming up through every step of the ranks, and with the decisions you've had to make. So there are lots of moving parts. So what is your vision? Because there are lots of practical decisions that go in with that too, because there's cost study analysis and, you know, whatever all of that is. So tell us what your vision is.
Well, I mean, your statement kind of nailed it. I mean, my vision is I want Bookmans to be I guess the first thing I would say is that I want Bookmans to aspire. And so one of the things to realize with change is that it's always aspirational and it's always difficult and there's always a falling short, right? You're never quite achieving what you aspire to, but if you fail to aspire, then you just accept what is. And so, I mean, when you introduced the conversation, you talked about the three threats that we're facing, and concurrent with what's happening in the COVID sphere, obviously, you know, we've just gone through a summer and a season of trauma in the United States when you look at it environmentally. And though we're dealing on the one hand with the business trauma and survival of trying to survive this pandemic, we're seeing what's happening in the world. And Bookmans, at its root, at its basis, is a repurposing business.
Right.
And I think that the first thing that I realized is that though that's incredible and it's important and it is bedrock and it is what we will always be, and I'm incredibly proud of it, it's not enough. Like, being a repurposing business is not enough given what is happening with our climate crisis. And so the first step I had to make and the organization had to make was to aspire to do better. Now, when you aspire to do better and you're already doing pretty well, that's when you realize where the friction points are and where the barriers are and where the difficulty lies. And so, you know, my vision, first and foremost, is to aspire to do better and to be more sustainable in everything we do, to constantly be mindful of the moment we are in from a social justice perspective. And I'd like to put a little definition on that.
I'd love you to.
The Bookmans, and I think rightly, and I'm very proud of this, has always occupied or tried to occupy the position of being what I call the public square. We want to be an environment where all perspectives are welcome, where effectively the exchange of ideas creates the evolution of all to the better idea. And so we are still very much that organization and always will be. But the reality of the last 10 years, I would say, is that the evolution of social media, the ability of social media to narrow and direct to you a discourse, an opinion, a view of humanity that is exactly what you already think and doesn't allow you to expand to other perspectives, and the fact that that is being fed to you so efficiently. Like, we've created this perfect propaganda engine that just feeds back to individuals and at any position on the political spectrum what they already think. And makes them think that what they already think is the only thing to think. What it has done is, I think, fundamentally damage rationality in our public and even personal discourse. And so our commitment to social justice is a commitment to maintaining an open, discursive environment so that voices that have been suppressed can be heard, voices that need to be heard are amplified, but that no voice is excluded, because it doesn't help us to only hear what we already believe or what we already think. There has to be an openness as well and a willingness to listen as well across all perspectives. And so that's really the value proposition of the environment. The other thing I would say is that cultural consumption matters. Cultural consumption creates empathy. It creates understanding. It creates engagement with somebody who is different or has a unique set of experiences compared to me. And so what Bookmans is really here to do is to bind together people in the community that have an interest in culture. You put those two things together, and I think that really creates almost without force or direction, a social justice environment. It's sort of the social justice equivalent to the sustainability piece of Bookman's, which is the repurposing piece at its bedrock. Our job is to take disposable goods and turn them into durable goods, right? Don't throw that away. Reuse it, repurpose it, give it or sell it to somebody who will reuse it or repurpose it. Recycling is wonderful. It's certainly better than landfilling.
But it's the third R.
But it is the third R for a reason. Repurposing is really how you minimize the waste problem.
Right.
And so, but just repurposing as a business is not enough. So what we began talking about is looking really at everything we do in the business day to day, whether it's energy consumption, paper consumption, transactional activity, how can we be more sustainable in everything that we do? And this is where it gets hard, because there are paths of least resistance that a business follows or that individuals follow, and those things are difficult to change. For those of you who know Bookman's, we hand out paper trade credit. We hand out paper trade credit because that is the way our POS system is designed to operate, and that operation is kind of hard-coded into it. We are beginning a process of developing a new POS system so that we can go away from paper trade credit, but that is a multi-hundred-thousand-dollar process that will take years to execute. It's not just a question of choosing.
Oh, I think we'll do that next week. Right.
It's not just a question of choosing, it's a question of executing. But if you don't aspire, if you don't seek to do better, you'll never get there.
I agree.
So I think that's the biggest thing that we've realized, is that we have an obligation to aspire at Bookman's. I hope that every business leader feels that obligation to aspire, but we certainly do.
And I think that, I don't mean to interrupt if I did.
No, you're fine.
I think that, you know, like, we can talk about lighting and HVAC and solar, and it cracks me up that we're making a big deal about putting electric charging stations in businesses when Bob did it literally, I think it was 20 years ago.
It was 20 years ago.
And I was over there, and it was like, you got to be kidding. And then there's a water fountain that has a nice little thing over it that says, "Made in honor of Mrs. Green," or something. Little things that feed my ego, let's be honest. What you get, what is harder, I think, for all of us, and I think it's the most important message of this podcast and of what you're trying to do, it's tough. And I remember when I was doing this Cultivating Women's Leadership, very woo-woo spiritual retreat in eastern New Mexico, very profoundly impacted my life. I had to watch a film on white privilege, and I was so offended. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. If I'm getting invited to this group, what did I know about? I'm not prejudiced. And that film profoundly changed my life, because first of all, I was born white, which gives you white privilege. It's not a choice. You don't click it. You don't check it on the box. I'm white, and people can see that the minute they meet me.
Right.
So the nuances that I hope down the road that you and I and your wonderful team can get to is, there are things in my language even where I check myself, because my friend said something about getting a particular kind of car, and she said, well, that's what she should get. You know, everybody I know drives them. And I said to her, no, not really. That's a $45,000 price point, so everybody I know does not drive that. She's a really good person. She's a progressive. She votes. She cares. Those are ingrained in us, and it is white privilege in this particular case, because everybody I know does not drive this particular car. I think the starting price is $45,000. So that being said, it's language, it's wording. There, my friend Mike Peel took an entire course on the cultural nuances in social media posts, which I know that I'm not a bad person, and I know that I'm woke, and I know that I care, and I also know that I make mistakes, because it's so ingrained in us to make these comments that we don't think about. That's the hardest part of building or creating a different culture. So just because we have really gone down the rabbit hole, which I love, it's so much more important that we went where it should go instead of a list of questions. That's how I've always navigated and curated this. But there are big decision points with what you have to make, not just financial, which is key, because if you don't make the right ones, you're not going to be here. So all those wonderful things you talk about will go down the drain because there won't be any, you'll be closing the doors. So there are major financial decisions like the one you just mentioned. When you're putting an HVAC system in, when you're talking about electricity and water, all these myriad of choices, what do you have to think about? And I know I shouldn't ask you a very long leading question, but let's do it because it's our show.
Well, what you have to think about is that resources are always limited. Financial resources are always limited. And, and you mentioned this earlier with the cash flow piece. No matter how big your business is, you have a budget.
Maybe Amazon doesn't.
Maybe Amazon. If I ever have that experience, I'll let you know. But even Amazon.
Call me right away.
Even Amazon has cost factors all over the place.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine now even?
Right. And so what you're doing is you're saying, or at least what I feel you should be doing is, let's take the bells and whistles away. Let's take the, we're not trying to win the press conference here, right? We're trying to actually build in a way that maximizes sustainability and will yield true benefit over the long term.
Right.
Bookman's is a long-term business. We have long-term commitments to our community. We're not going to build a store or build a physical building and then be out in 2 or 3 years. So just some of the practical decision making. Bookman's is in the process of renovating space for our new store. It's going to be on River and Stone. And it's going to, we're very excited about the new space because we feel like it's an opportunity to really create not only a wonderful environment for our customers, but to do so in a way that maximizes sustainability, that really improves the space. So there are many things that we can be investing dollars in: HVAC systems, insulation, lighting, electric car charging, water consumption. And so what we really do is we look at each of these things individually in the context of a budget, which represents a limit to how much we can spend, and say, where do we get the most value? And by we, I mean the planet, the community. Not just Bookman's itself. Where am I actually saving the most energy? Where am I reducing my water to the greatest degree? Where am I sustaining broader energy efficiency initiatives like with electric car charging? And how much is each of these elements costing me? Where does the planet most benefit if I spend money? And so it could be solar. We've done that at a location. Very proud of the solar we put in at Midtown. It's a little bit painful for me to be relocating that store because of the solar, but the reality is the panels are there generating. And so that is a benefit to the grid. When I'm looking at this new store, the biggest cost factors we have in any building are lighting and HVAC, over and over and over again. So of course, we're doing full LED lighting and we're putting in the highest SEER available equipment on the HVAC, and we are tripling the insulation factors in the building to try and minimize that energy consumption and maximize the efficiency of the building. When we looked at all the different things we could spend money on, those were the areas where we had the greatest ability to affect an outcome. But every situation is different.
Everyone, and there are going to be a million of decision points that you're having to make. And I want to press pause here on this because even though, and this is the big conundrum in my 15-year journey, wanting to do the right thing is one thing, having the capital to do it is another. And then if you do, knowing that the ROI is there.
Right.
We have to say that because if you do all those things, the life of that building will have lower water costs, lower energy costs, electric bills. I mean, anything that in my world that I can see right now is going up. So I think it will help. So you, I mean, Bookman's is in such good hands with you, with you guys. I mean, there's no question about that. So I want to talk about kind of cutting to the chase here. Books, in my opinion, are a forever thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob and I have talked about this. Mm-hmm. So then he went into CDs when people were, do we even use CDs anymore? I don't even know.
No, it's vinyl records are the thing now.
Coming back.
Yeah, absolutely.
How do you keep a vision, or do you have a vision for the future? Because things are going to change. Do you think books are always going to be around? I do, because I'm always going to be buying them at Bookman's.
Mm-hmm.
And shaming people publicly if they buy on Amazon because it's so easy Don't Let It Be Easy. The smartest thing that Al Gore ever did was name his film An Inconvenient Truth, because it can be inconvenient, but then you get there and the experience is worth it because that's what you've successfully created. So do you have any other, like, what's recyclable? What might you be doing next? Is it just watching?
Well, I think the first thing that we always want to do is we want to be repurposing as much as possible,
right?
So that's a first, that's a bedrock principle of the business, that we are a repurposing business. So, but what's happened in that we see, and that I've seen really going back 10 years, is that we're not a content business anymore. And what I mean by that is this, so there, that's the content of the book, the words that are in it, the information.
Right, right, right.
We're not a content seller. Content can be acquired, you know, electronically in a myriad of different ways. What we are is an object seller. We sell objects that have meaning to people. And to answer your question about the book, no, I don't think the book's going anywhere. And I think the reason the book isn't going anywhere is twofold. One, and I've noticed this with my own kids who are 20 and 23 respectively, when they're reading, that's the time they put their phone down. They actually want to read a
book.
So true.
My 17-year-old grandson, who's hot, hip, and happening, wants to read books.
Right.
He doesn't want a Kindle.
Book. Yeah,
he's 17 and on the cutting edge. My granddaughter, can you imagine showing a 2.5-year-old a Kindle?
Right. So, and I believe that part of that is that we no matter how plugged in we are, we need a respite. We need a break.
I love that thought.
And so that's one. The other reason is that objects in our life matter. We still want to reflect who we are to others. And a book on the bookcase, if you walk into my house and you see my library, that says something about me. And it's an intention that I have to say those things to folks. So I think the real defining characteristic of everything that we have in Bookman's, whether it's the tchotchkes, the jewelry, the musical instruments, the books, the CDs, the DVDs, the records, it's that these are all objects that represent to the person who owns them something about themselves and their engagement with culture. And as long as that's, that will always be true, I believe. So what will Bookman's sell? Bookman's will literally sell anything that... Seriously,
answer.
We will literally sell
that
anything
answer.
That fits within the rubric of, you know, an object that reflects culture to anybody,
to
any individual who wants to engage with it. You know, recently, the New Times and Phoenix created a new best of category for Bookman's best used everything store. That is literally
love that.
That is literally the category. And we're the first, I think, and maybe the only winner, because I'm not sure who else would win. But that really defines it. It's going to be used, right, to the greatest degree possible. We're going to have repurposed things because that is our mission, is to repurpose things, to turn disposable goods into durable goods. And then after that, it's just kind of everything. It's just sort of...
That's a great answer because what it says to me is it's infinite. If there's no finite, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's going to grow. It's going to change. There are going to be different things that you never thought you would sell there.
That's right.
And that's, to me, is the joy of it. And it's really, when I go in, and I'm a demographic, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I go in for a book. Whoever's putting that stuff out is genius, okay? Ingenious, because I'm like, oh, that would be great for my friend Molly, or Cindy would love that, or my daughter Emily, or my daughter, because...
I'm going to let the visual merchandising team know.
Let them know.
Job well
because
done.
I don't go out there into those abyss of Bookman's and up and down the aisles without finding something that... I have to get this. And when I bring my daughter Katie, it's the same thing. It's just, it's a wonderful experience because, first of all, they're affordable. And it's convenient because I didn't go there for that and a birthday might be coming up. So I think that's wonderful. So even though I think we should start a show and announce it here. It's going to be the Sean and Gina show. It's going to be late night, 8 o'clock, and we're going to talk about all things really important. We could have Bob call in.
There we go.
From time to time and weigh in on this. But, all good things must be continued. They don't end. I want to know, this is the toughest question I'm asking you. What do you want your legacy to be? Because I want to do this. I usually do it at the end. But my belief has always been pace of the leader, pace of the team. Because I think that's true. And I would love anybody to challenge me on that. How people look to leadership. And sometimes they become great leaders themselves because they emulate that and add their own style. But you are really... a great leader, you're fun to be around, you're able to make hard choices. And Bob started it, And then you are here now in charge. He is not. Mm-hmm. And that's a big, huge thing for him. He's enjoying his life. I don't even like him anymore now that I think about it. I don't like him. Every time I call him, I say, why am I calling you living up in Hood River on a gorgeous piece of land with apples outside your door? But that's okay. I love all of God's children. What would you like your legacy to be?
That Bookman's is still here.
Oh, what a great answer, Sean.
And I'll give a little background to
that. That's a great answer.
I believe that any community with a Bookman's in it is better off for that presence. I truly believe that to be true. And this is why, as you mentioned right from the top, my entire professional career has been spent with Bookman's. And when I was young and started a Bookman's, I was in my mid-20s, wasn't really sure what my path was. But if you had told me that I was going to be working as a retail executive at the age of 55, I would have said, okay, well, just, you know, I don't know where I lost my soul, but
right,
just go ahead
shoot
and
me.
Shoot me in the head right now.
So not what the path was.
Exactly. But Bookman's is special. I mean, truly, truly a special place and a special presence in our community. And I just, my first desire for legacy is to have sustained it. The thing that I would like people to think about Bookman's now, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, is that during times of disruption, uncertainty, Bookman's was there and it was solid and it was present. And I could go there and safe. And I could go there to find a sense that there is still a rationality in this crazy world. And I know that seems kind of cliche, but I believe that we are dealing with really unprecedented disruption in our lives right now. I just want Bookman's to be there. I want it to be present.
So that gives me goosebumps. I'm not going to cry on the show. I'm not ashamed of crying. I like to cry. I'm like, what are you upset that I'm crying? Get in touch with your emotions, dude. And I certainly don't mean that to you. But what my final thought is, and how I'd like everybody to leave this podcast with the thought, we need the Bookman's of our world. Wherever you are listening to this, I think Tucson is very fortunate because we reflect a culture that does care about locally owned. We really, really do. And I got caught, and I've said this on many podcasts, where I was talking to a group downtown and the room was packed. And I said something, there's a wonderful book, and you know, I just ordered it on Amazon, and this woman named Paula Schlussberg said, excuse me? I was like, Paula, what's the matter? She goes, you bought it where? I bought it on Amazon. And she said, have you ever heard of Antigone? So shame on me, that's a locally owned bookstore, not used books, but another thing where
fantastic
I never
store.
Get out of there, and they have chocolate too. Mm. So that's really doubled whammy for me. And the most beautiful card collection, we have mostly books, but we have Bookman's. And people in this town, this is what I want to leave you with. It is easy to order on Amazon. It doesn't mean a thing to them. When you buy a book at Bookman's, you're investing in yourself. Let's be honest, your community, your kids' future job. You have no idea where it's going to be. And something that matters, that's of substance, that has great leadership, that has people who really care at every level of this organization. So even if there isn't one on your corner, like 3 minutes away, it's an inconvenient truth that the Bookman's of the world will be what sustains us. And I really believe that. I think we're headed for some darker times. I admit it. I'm Pollyanna, and I still think, knowing all these friends I have at the University of Arizona that are working on pandemics, this will happen again. Mm-hmm. You'll be more ready. The government will know a little bit more about how to arrange things. I mean, my PP money changed from the first one I got to the second one I got, which was much easier mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. comply with all the mm-hmm. restrictions. It saved us in many cases. So I'm honored to be working with Bookman's. I love Bob and Amy Sue. You know that it has nothing to do with the experience of Bookman's now, even though it has everything to do with it because Bob created that culture from the day he started.
Yes.
Who else wears a freaking blue beard for year after year? I mean, I just adore him. So I want to thank you and keep on keeping on.
Thank you.
And experiences like this make me do what I want to do, which is make a difference in the world and create consciousness around social injustices. And You've got this, my friend, and I'm really proud to be working with you. So thanks for being here.
And thank you so much for having me. This is a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. The time really flew. And Dave Labreck, you doll. I love you to the moon. He's our sound engineer. He listens to every show. He might be asleep by now. I'm only kidding, Dave. And we thank the world of him and my team that puts all this and makes the magic happen. I like to mention that as much as I can. So you will leave a legacy. There's no doubt in my mind. And I hope I live a really long time to see it continue.